hi, friends, and welcome back to Sermon Smith. As you know, Sermon Smith is a podcast of conversations about the craft of sermon preparation. Wanted to share one or two things with you before we get into it. We have a new partnership with Logos Bible Software. We've had quite a few guests who have mentioned that they love Logos Bible Software, and I use it myself. I love it. So if you've been interested in Logos and you want to give it a try, we can offer 15% off a base package. And if you purchase it through our link, then some of your purchase will go back to support the show. You can go to logos.com/sermonsmith to look that over and make sure that we get the credit and you get your discount. We also have some links rotating through some sponsorship and partnership opportunities in the header of the site at sermonsmith.com. And also, as always, I'm thankful if you're willing to tweet about shows, post to Facebook, maybe write blog posts, and of course, reviews on iTunes are always helpful as well. I have a guest today that I'm meeting for the first time, but I can already tell this is going to be a fun one. His name is Eric. Is it Eric Russ? It's not a Rus, right? It's Russ.
Yeah, Russ.
Eric Russ. Russ. Mm-hmm. Who is coming at us from Detroit. Yeah.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. My wife wanted to be Russo because she thought that would be cooler than Russ. So, but oh well.
But she got Russ.
She got Russ.
She'd rather have you than the last name Russo, I take it.
Amen. I think she would say that. Well, I'm praying for that.
Well, Eric, tell us about your context. Tell us about your church and, you know, the kind of people you preach to, where you are.
Yeah, yeah. We're in the inner city, lower east side of Detroit. Our area is around 98% African American. Mm-hmm. But our church context is interesting. It's probably 30% African American and probably another 5 to 10% Asian and probably another 5% Hispanic and then the rest Caucasian. And we've had many individuals move into our community to be on mission for Jesus. So, that's our context inside, and then we're ministering to an area that's probably one of the top three most impoverished areas in Detroit, which, as you know, is one of the poorest cities in the nation.
Wow. So that kind of diversity, did you work hard to create that, or did that happen?
Yeah, as you know, the Lord just does this thing. We really wanted to be a multicultural church, and we knew that in an impoverished area, if we just served the poor in our area and we did not bring any upwardly mobile individuals, we would cease to be a church. We would become just a mission. Mm-hmm. And that at some point you have to balance serving the clientele that we're serving, but yet bringing certain skills and things of that sort. And so just the reality was that brought in different people of different ethnicities. And so by God's grace, people saw the need, desired to be about Christ, wanted to serve Jesus and see a gospel-centered church in this area. And probably in a matter of 3 or 4 years, we had over 50 individuals outside the city move into the city and purchase homes to be on mission for Christ.
Yeah. So how did you choose Detroit? You're not from Detroit. We've just covered this.
Right. I'm not from the D. We chose the D intentionally, actually. For a while, I had been running from inner city neighborhoods and impoverished areas. I grew up in an impoverished area. Grew up, my dad's is a drug addict and grew up with an alcoholic mom, a drug addict dad. Wanted to get away from that scene, but when I met my wife and was walking with the Lord, she would continue to encourage me as we would read the Bible, that it's just hard to read the scriptures and not see God talk about what our response is to be to the least of these. Hmm. And so as time went on, I just didn't want to hear it. I just kept trying to preach the gospel, be in the area that we were in. We're in the suburbs of Cincinnati. But as time went on, God's grace just continued to allow my heart to change where I felt like, Lord, if you want us in a city context, I want to be willing to do that by His grace. And so we gathered a team of people. We knew we wanted to be in an environment or raise up an environment where the gospel was being preached, where discipleship could be a pillar and where we could be an intentional community and where those three things weren't happening. And so we looked at different places, including Detroit, Tennessee. We always threw in a couple cool places just in case the Lord was calling us to Colorado Springs and Boulder. We had a couple cool places in Tennessee. But as time went on, we all prayed. It was seven of us at the time. and we came and did a vision trip up to Detroit. And the Lord allowed us to meet some guys on the street. We got into a weird altercation, and actually through that altercation, I realized this is where we need to be.
I've never heard a comparable story to that one before. An altercation led us here.
Yeah, yeah. The guys start cursing at us, very upset, frustrated. We were able to talk him down. We begin to talk about Jesus. And as we were looking at this young brother, I just realized I'm looking in his eyes, and it was like, it just seemed that there was just a loss of dignity, that he didn't know that he was created with value, purpose, and worth.
Yeah.
And we just felt like, man, we need to be here. By God's grace, would you allow us to just neighbor in this community, not try to do something to people, but neighbor here and just remind people that God hasn't forgotten them and that God has created them, that they possess God's image.
Yeah. What kind of background or affiliation does your church have? Is it denominational, independent, or?
Yeah, we are actually independent. We've been for a while. Actually, I was looking at Acts 29 for a while. We were actually looking at Reformed Baptist. When we first started, we were intentional about being independent because in Detroit, in a black culture, church is just more of a cultural thing. Especially, we're in probably the highest church per capita in the nation as far as the city is concerned in Detroit.
Really?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. We have more churches in the city than any other city in the nation. At the same time, we have a huge high crime rate. We have high illiteracy rates. And you go down the list of all the negative stereotypes, usually you see them flow out of Detroit. And so there's a disconnect there. And so what we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure that as we preach the gospel, we could begin to be ecumenical in this community without being a doctrinal minimalist and begin to come alongside individuals who are of different denominations in our community and try to lock arms with different people who are about the gospel. So when we started out, we started independent for that reason.
And have you found that people extend you credibility because you don't have some kind of connection, or are they a little bit more standoffish because of that?
I feel like in the beginning, they were super standoffish because us coming to Detroit, we were kind of foreigners.
Yeah.
And what's been great, though, and I think if we would have just preached the gospel but not have lived here, I don't think there would have been a transition. But the cool thing has been, you know, we've been here almost 8 years, and I live the first house off Mack Ave, which is a major drag street in our community. And people now know our kids. They know where I live. They see us every day. And so now they realize, man, this guy's a neighbor. And so I think as the long haul has taken place, now it matters a lot because they see us as different than the churches in the community, where it seems like the pastor's the big dog driving a nice car. They see us, and they see us serving, doing corner stores in the community, starting literacy programs, starting sports programs, starting legal clinics. And now, by God's grace, it seems like the Lord has used it to actually provide a platform for people to hear the gospel.
Well, talk about then. This is all, it's all good to get that context to like try to imagine where somebody preaches. So talk about, let me ask this, how often do you preach in your church? Are you weekly, or do you have others who preach?
I am weekly, but praise God, we for a while, again, being in our community, we wanted to raise up our elders and have at least a few be from our community. And so that took around 6 years. And now we finally have some elders, and actually May 28th, we're moving toward a full plurality of elders where I'll be an elder among equals, which is awesome. Really excited about that. And we have a preaching team, a strong preaching team, but I do the bulk of the preaching. So I'll probably do, 8 or 9 weeks on, then 1 week off, or something like that. So I preach a lot, but I have guys on our elder board who also are great teachers, and so they share their load that way.
That's great. What do you see as the role of preaching? Because I've talked to people from a lot of different backgrounds, so I found this is a really helpful question, to ask. Within the life of your congregation, what is the role of preaching? What purpose does it serve?
Wow, that's a good question. It's funny. And I feel like in our context, which is really exciting, I think different in some other contexts, it's still, by God's grace, is basically the nucleus of what we are about in our worship service, for sure. And so basically it's the centrality of what we're doing when we gather together to remind ourselves about what God has done all week in our community. And so the preaching of the word is both evangelistic to proclaim the gospel to those in our community, but also to be an encouragement and exhortation to our body of Christ to continue to have longevity and fight the fight of faith. What we have realized is that we've had to, in our community, because we're so missional, we've had to recover a healthy theology of what Sunday's about, because we're so missional and we're serving people and neighboring all the time and having people over dinners and having movie nights in our front yard. People for a while in our community start seeing church as like, it's awesome, but guess what? You know, we're on mission all week, so it's not super important. So we've just in the last year had to recover a healthy theology of the importance of the gathering of the people of God.
How'd you go about that?
Teaching from up front, man. Yeah. Teaching in our small groups. We call them MAG groups. Just sitting, you know, because we have a close-knit community, we're sitting people down, sitting my elders down who lead many of our MAG groups, and then a few individuals who are outside of our elder team who lead our MAG groups, and saying, hey, guys, here's what it looks like. Our people are coming late to service. Many people aren't coming to service. Why is that? It seems that we've, out of a zeal to be authentic and missional, we've missed a very important component to missionality, and that's actually the Sunday gathering. And so we talked about it. I tried to provide a theological underpinning behind why we should make sure that we're challenging our people to be here on Sundays, and we're slowly starting to see people really recapture that reality.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So what kind of things do you preach on? Do you tend to do text-based studies? Do you do lectionary? What do you guys do for sermon series?
Yeah, good question. We our focus is that our desire is to go through every book of the Bible expositionally. Mm-hmm. And so right now we're in the book of Acts. And then what we do is we do expositional teaching through books. And our heart behind that is, man, left into my flesh, I'm going to probably stay in those areas that are very comfortable to me, that make me sound really cool.
Yeah.
And what I love about just going through books of the Bible is it allows us to really see the whole counsel of God's word and see what God is doing, you know, all throughout his narrative. In addition to us teaching books of the Bible, we try to follow the liturgical calendar and make sure that we take breaks during different aspects of the liturgical calendar. So during Advent, we'll usually take a break and spend time talking about the coming of our Savior. And also during Lent, Easter, we'll take another break. And then usually there's a little pocket in the summer where we'll take a break and probably deal with something that's more culturally, that's really hitting the heartbeat of our culture, you know. So we'll talk about, you know, racism in the gospel or something like that. So, yeah, so we find ourselves following the liturgical calendar, teaching expositionally, and then every once in a while, like Book of Acts, you know, takes a couple years.
Yeah.
And so in order to keep people fresh, we'll throw in a little series here and there just to shake it up a little bit. But our focus and our bread and butter truly is trying to stay faithful to teaching the whole counsel of God.
And so how far in advance do you try to plan those out? I mean, you know, you're going through Acts, you got 28 chapters. How far in advance do you chunk up those scriptures?
Right. So, yeah. So we just started this whole dynamic. We've done John, we've done Genesis. And so what we do is a year before, basically, I'll read the book numerous times. I learned in seminary. I took a cue from a friend of mine. His dad is actually Doug Moo, and about how before really going through a book expositionally, he would read it at least 13 times.
Wow.
Just to gain sort of a familiarity with the narrative. And so I really took that to heart. And so I really try to read the book over and over again. And then when I'm going traveling somewhere, I'll put it in the CD and I'll listen to it when I have like space, when my kids are at the dentist, you know. And so I would just really try to just digest the book. And then through that, I'll kind of parse it out in chapters and verses in which I think, okay, this makes sense. These seems like to be certain pericopes that make sense, that flow together. And then what I usually do after that, I'll actually go and look at some of my heroes like John Piper and some of these other guys and see if they've done the book and see how they broke it up and see if I'm in a right playing field or if I'm doing something totally crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, I'll do that, and then I'll send it to my elders, and then I'm always telling those guys it's a subject to change.
Of course, yeah. I just changed our series that are 3 weeks out from now, so.
Yeah, right.
So as you do, you know, I love that idea of reading over it 12, 13 times, listening to it to get a different ear in it. Do you even try to engage with it in different versions and all of that, just to really try to get a different scope on it?
Yeah, good question. I have friends that do that. You know, I don't do that. Yeah. No, I don't. You know, what's interesting though, is I'll read from the ESV and I'll find myself studying from the ESV or the NIV. So I'm kind of weird like that, but I don't find myself, trying to listen or read a lot of other versions. So yeah.
So when you do break it all up, then do you really go through, like, do you try to put similar themes together, or you go directly through, we're going to do these 12 verses, then we're going to do the next 15 verses?
Yeah, it's funny. I hope my personality makes up for the monotony, but yeah, I literally walk through, the Bible. So we'll, sure, right now, like last week we did, Acts chapter 4, and I think we went from like 12 to 31, and this Sunday we're going to do Acts chapter 4, 33, through verse 11 of chapter 5.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, then let's talk about your timeline. Like, think about one particular sermon. Maybe it's the one you just preached, one you got coming up, but talk us through your timeline of how you put a sermon together. How far in advance do you start, and what are your steps?
Good question. It's funny. When I first started, teaching the scriptures and right outside seminary, especially not at MacAv, but when I was at other churches, man, I had time to look at the Greek, and I would translate the passage, you know, because I was all excited. And now, it's interesting. I have a reader that shows you the English and the Greek, and I read the Greek and see if there's anything that pops out. But I definitely haven't had the time to translate it in Greek. Like I used to.
Is Gordon Conwell going to withdraw your degree here?
I know. Don't tell. Yeah, I hope they don't get this. But yeah, so I'm still reading the Greek though, guys. So just for the record. But yeah, so I don't do that anymore. But I'll have great familiarity with the text because I've read it so many times, and then I'll read through. And then I already have kind of a skeleton of, like, and what I'm realizing in our culture context is two things. First, I try to balance, how do I say this? Like the intellectual pedigree, to still let people know in our community that, yeah, this is an educated brother who can bring the text, but I'm also in the inner city of the east side of Detroit. And so I got to be careful to make sure that I don't think I'm teaching at chapel and seminary or teaching, you know, individuals from my suburban church when I was in Loveland, Ohio. Because at the end of the day, you know, just having a doctrine, but it really not applying to people is just kind of boring. And so what we realize is, like, I got to be careful. So now what I do is I try to have a skeleton and say, man, okay, it seems like this is where the passage is going. And then by doing my reading, I can look and just briefly view the grammar, and that can kind of show me if I'm going in the right path. Then I'll begin to do my grammatical analysis, which really helps me. Some people don't like it, but it really helps me just understand the text and just see, like, where the author is trying to head. And then I also look at the context and just understand, like, where we have been going. And from there, I can quickly get a gist of, like, what I'm thinking a big idea probably is, where we're headed, what key terms I want to define that don't make sense to me, or I don't think it's going to make sense to the people. And after I get that kind of that framework done, I'll kind of head to some of my which I love, my commentaries, which will kind of let me know if I'm in the right camps or if some people are disagreeing with me or not. And then I'll continue to define my words. It's what I've been telling my wife lately. I'll kind of put treatments on it now. So I'll do a couple hours Monday, sit it away, a couple hours Tuesday, build on it a little more. Put it away. On Wednesday, I'm kind of finishing up, and I'm also reading and listening to other sermons. If I can find some other sermons on that passage, I'll listen to some guys, you know, Jay Mack or you know, John Pipe or Keller or Driscoll, and I'll listen to see, well, what were those guys saying about this passage as well? See if I missed something really big or not, to make sure that I'm being faithful to my people. And then, and then finally, if I miss anything, I'm trying to see, I actually wrote a few things down just to make sure that I can give you clearly what I do.
Sure.
Weekly, and I miss anything.
You prepared for a talk about sermon preparation.
I did. See. yeah, and then I just add my layers from there, and then finally I'll pause and just look at everything and say, so now what? How do I allow this? What does it look like for this to affect our people in the sense of how they view the Lord, themselves, and their community? And that's how I try to find and see my application flow out of what we've gotten out of the text.
Yeah. So Monday, Tuesday, you talk about, those couple hours. That's mostly the
observation, interpretation time.
And that's both commentary work and reading the Greek alongside the English.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, so then as you get to Wednesday, is that when you start to structure it into an actual, let's outline this?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Wednesday is my time where I'm starting to throw my treatments on, where I'm outlining it, where I'm kind of now sharing how I would kind of share this with the body. Right. And this is where I'm defining terms and really trying to see, are there other passages in the Bibles that's talking about this? And also I think one of the big things that I'm realizing, this is now as I feel like I'm getting better, is I'm realizing as I'm doing exposition, there's great opportunities to kind of teach doctrine within exposition. And so, there'll be a scenario, for example, a very famous one, Ananias and Sapphira, right? So you have that scenario. In the beginning, I was talking about the people having all things in common. So here's a time to really discuss, what does it look like to have unity? And then what are some things that can detract from it? So now it's like a teaching moment because there's a doctrine of unity that's popped out that's very clear.
Yeah.
I can pause and kind of teach the people of God, the importance of how God views unity. So I try to find those little tidbits as I'm reading through the text as well.
Gotcha. Which obviously Ananias' Fiverr is coming up for you. That's Acts 5, isn't it?
That's this weekend.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's why it's fresh.
So that a lot of that happens on Wednesday. Is there further work that happens Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday morning?
Yeah, you know what? No, good question. It's funny. Thursday, I try to have my notes. I try to basically that's when I take my sermon, which I'll kind of type out. And I don't type out everything. I don't write it like a manuscript. But then I'll take that and I'll make it into basically PowerPoint notes and send that to my buddy Jonathan, who actually makes it into the PowerPoint slides.
Yeah.
And I'll send my memory verse over to our director of operations, a buddy named Mike. He puts in the program. And then, so at that point, I'm all set. Now, the one thing that I'm praising God for is Friday's my off day. And Saturday is our kind of mission day where we have our legal clinic open. We have Max Sports going. And so God prepared me for what we're doing here, I think, early on. And that was when I was dating my wife, Sarah. I realized one day she came out to see me at a conference. And I was teaching, and I found myself at the conference not being able to really focus and hang out with her. I was just thinking about what I was going to say next.
Yeah.
I was focused on how I was going to share, and I really couldn't enjoy myself. And so then I remember, piggybacking that on to seminary. I remember being in seminary, and they're just like, man, some of you guys, after Sunday, maybe you might throw up. You're going to be thinking about your sermon. I thought to myself, I'm like, that doesn't sound like joy. Like,
right.
if God has called me to teach the scriptures and I'm only going to be of some health and value to my family 3 days a week, that just does not seem like a good stewardship of my life. And so I asked the Lord to give me the grace to try to make sure that I didn't spend all my days worrying about a sermon. But if God is in it, I need to be able to prepare and be on mission and be able to serve and care for my family. And so, yeah, Friday, I don't look at my sermon. Saturday, I'm serving the community and we're on mission fighting in the hood, for the people in the community. And I tell you, on Sunday, I tell people all the time, I think I'm not the most polished guy. My analogies aren't awesome. But I do sincerely believe that after people come to Mac Ave, they think, wow, I believe that guy is walking with Jesus, and I believe that guy is reading the Bible and believes what he's saying, and I believe it's clear and it's sincere. And I felt like something had to give, and I thought me looking really cool,
polished,
right, and I'm cool with cats who can do that. I just can't. Like, I just don't have the capacity. I really don't. I realize I tried it, and I can be polished, but it takes so much time that I probably wouldn't be the valuable person, as valuable as I desire to be for my wife and kids. But instead, I can know Christ, walk with the Lord, passionately preach the scriptures, and be goofy. But I get the Saturday where I get to really be on mission in our community, and I get to throughout the week, you know, handle cats who are dealing with drug abuse, women who are getting, you know, taken advantage of, and I can be on the street, you know, fighting the fight of faith. And so that's what we chose to do in the community. My elders have been supporting me, so praise the Lord.
So how much time do you think you put into a sermon?
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like I don't put any time. I do.
I'm sure you do, yeah.
Yeah, but I realize, like, it's not as much as I probably would have when I thought about it coming out of seminary. How much time do I put in a sermon? I probably do a good 6 hours on Monday.
Yeah.
And then I do probably another 2 to 3 on Tuesday, then probably maybe another 2 on Wednesday, then probably 1 on Thursday, something like that.
Yeah. And it kind of sounds like what you're saying is, tell me if I'm getting this right, is you knew that you can't fully give what some might give. And I'm in the same boat you are, so I get that.
Absolutely.
But what you decided to cut out was that final really over the top, and I don't mean over the top in a bad way, but wordsmithing and polish that others might be able to put into it.
Yeah, man, and you feel me, because you're a preacher too. Like I tell you, to be honest, my flesh, sometimes I see some of my friends who I love and they pursue Christ, man, and they got that margin to do that. And man, their word choice is like amazing, and I'm like, dang, like I wish I could.
But I'm
like, that's really cool, and I'm like, I have to renew my mind not to covet that and not to be jealous, you know, but be like, yo, God has blessed them to be able to do that and be able to have that margin. And also, some of these guys are just brilliant. Like, I just realized, like, for example, we're mutual friends with Jonathan Dawson, man. Like, that brother's just brilliant, you know? And I feel like I could pull off some of the stuff that JD does, but it'll take like all night, dude. And my wife will be like, dude, where you been? You know? So I realized early on, I could be me, or I could try to be some of these guys that God has just gifted. You know, and as my seminary professor said early on back in the day, I remember our first exam, he was like, you know, some of you guys are looking really sad right now. And what I want to help you understand is some of you guys got the juice to get an A, and some of you guys are just B students. He was like, and that's okay. Praise the Lord. He was like, just know that some of you guys have the juice. And so I'm trying to figure out that balance, not trying to be lazy, but trying to figure out that balance. Like, what matters? What context has God placed me in? Like, what do people value in our context? And in my hood, you know, people value, I mean, what I'm realizing, I could be the big time pastor, because we got a lot of pastors who, you know, aren't connected to the community. But what I'm realizing for the ministry that we're trying to do, I got to be on the block, you know?
Yeah.
I got to be on a block. That's just what's up. So that's just what we do.
How often do you find that works its way into your sermons? I mean, being on the block is sermon preparation, I'm sure. So how do you see that affecting and shaping? Like, how often do you talk about the sports and the clinics on Saturday. How often does something happen on Saturday that ends up changing at least a nuance of what you preach on Sunday?
Absolutely. That's a really good word. Yeah, all the time, because, you know, things happen at Max Sports. So Saturday, I'm a coach, you know, I coach the 4 and 5 year old kids and you know, it's crazy, you know, and we talk about that. And then we have a legal clinic, you know, we have all kind of stuff going on in our legal clinic. I mean, obviously if you got a legal clinic, you know why we got a legal clinic, you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right.
So there's all kind of things going on there. And you got to be careful, you know, want to make sure that we're upholding people's dignity, but we also want to talk about our community and talk about, and call people to vision. And so, and talk about the literacy training program that we have at MacLit. We have great leadership, and so I get to talk about specific stories, you know. And so, yeah, every week we find ourselves bringing in things that's happening on the street. Or what I love personally, I love being able to, you know, talk about people who are in the audience and knowing that I've hung with him on Tuesday and this thing happened with these group of people on Wednesday, and knowing, like, and so I'm laughing and joking and doing personal jokes up front, and everybody's like, man, my pastor goofy and crazy, but I love him, you know. So I just love that, you know, and I feel like for me, that allows me to have some sense of longevity, because I just can't, I mean, there's just too much drama in the pastorate, you know, so it's good just to kind of know our people, know our community, and really be able to say, like, my kids are here. I'm walking up and down the same street. My kids are walking up and down the same street, and we're not here to do something to you, but we're here to neighbor with you. And in this community, that's huge for the people to now respond, because I mean, we already got the stack is up against us, you know, the deck, in a sense that we got white folks in our church, Asians. I mean, these black folks looking like, why you want me to go to this church? But then when they know that we're all here, we moved here and we live here,
yeah.
That's been huge. That's been a huge statement of the gospel, you know, so.
Yeah. Did you grow up in church?
Nah, man. Well, my dad would send me and my brother to Sunday school religiously every weekend while he was selling crack. And so for me, it was almost like to be black was to go, you know, to be a Christian.
Yeah.
Which obviously me and you both know that's not the Christianity at all. I didn't understand the doctrines of grace or anything like that, you know? And so,
it's a cultural thing for you.
Absolutely. So, that was my deal growing up in church.
Yeah. I was just curious, you know, just hearing you talk about it and all that. So,
yeah.
So, can I pick apart a little bit? I don't mean pick apart in a critical way, but just to try to learn from you more, you know, what Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday looks like. You know, as you go through and you go, you know, you look at the Greek and all that, you start breaking out your commentaries. Are you just sitting at a computer typing into a Word document? You like to write it, handwrite all your thoughts out? How do you capture all those ideas?
I'm a computer guy. I wish I had a sweet Logos software.
Oh yeah.
On my old school, I had an IBM desktop with me. I'm sorry, laptop. I love that software, man. I think it wasn't at that point Mac compatible or something, but I lost it. So I said was great because I could take big passages and, you know, from the scriptures, and they would have all the different, you know, cross references and just plop them onto my document, and it was just great. So I missed that. Now I type it up, you know, and I'm able to use like Bible Gateway and things of that sort.
Yeah.
So now I use my computer a lot. Yeah.
All right. So, and your caption things, but I assume then for your commentaries, you've got a big, you're one of the few people I've interviewed who doesn't have a big bookshelf behind you that distracts me. So I assume it's somewhere else in the room.
I got a couple. Yeah.
But
yeah.
What are some of your favorite resources that you tend to go back to? Commentary series or?
Yeah. I love the New International Greek New Testament commentary.
Yeah.
It's a NIGCNT, the New International Greek Commentary in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. Love that. They still haven't completed it, I don't think. But that thing is awesome. I also like the New International Commentary of the New Testament and Old Testament.
Yeah.
As far as commentaries. And I love Word Biblical Commentary. I really like Bible Works software.
Yeah.
They're really good, which I want to put on my new computer.
I like you use this. That more for word studies, the Bible software?
Absolutely. Yeah, I use that for word studies because with those studies, you can like you can have the Greek and the Hebrew, right? You know, you can just do all. They have the Septuagint, they have the Greek, the Hebrew, and you can just
word
go crazy.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I love these commentaries on the New Testament, Old Testament.
Yeah.
You ever seen those?
Carson? Yeah, man. I have some of those.
Yeah, Greg Beale, he's one of my favorite writers. Like his commentary on Revelation is probably my favorite book ever. So I'm kind of
just for fun reading.
I know I'm a nerd like that, man. I love that. So it just changed the way I viewed evangelism, prayer, you name it. So, those are my favorite commentaries. As far as like authors, I mean, I'm a big John Piper fan. Mm-hmm. People get mad at me, but I think there's some good stuff. I like some N.T. Wright stuff. I mean, I think he's tripping off, you know, on some of the justification stuff, but I think his New Testament scholarship is actually, as far as historically is good. Who else I like? If I can show you, let me show you my little,
Oh yeah, I'm going to get dizzy. I'm kidding. I'll be fine.
Oh,
you do have bookshelves. They're just covered by your kids' pictures. I thought that was a bulletin board.
Yeah, all my kids, man. They're all there's books behind those. So.
All the kids' artwork.
You see them?
I do. I see a snowflake back there. I definitely can tell you have girls because I see a pink dress.
Yeah, she makes the most pictures. I have five kids.
And, whoa.
Their ranges is from 7 to. To 17 months. So
wow, that's a full house.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's really fun. Yeah. So I love surveys, Old Testament, New Testament survey, like Hill, Wharton, those guys. Mm-hmm.
So you're reading through those Monday, Tuesday, and just jotting down things that come out of them. So when you start to really form it all on Wednesday, what does that look like? You said you don't really manuscript. So is there? Yeah. Do you follow a certain structure every week for outline, or do you just start to see how all these different ideas are coming together?
Good question. Yeah, I basically. So remember Monday, I've read through the text, and I'm looking and saying, okay, what's the big idea? It seems like these are the questions that I would ask of the text if I was just kind of reading. So I'm getting those down. What are the words that I would say? What does this mean? Or my congregation would probably want to know what this means. So I'm doing all that. Right. And so I think that kind of helps me formulate. And again, one of my buddy, Sean McDonough, he would say to me, he's our New Testament, scholar at Gordon Conwell. And he always talked about staring at the fishes. And so, you know, they made you go through, so many times their summary of basically the how to study a passage, you know, biblical context, literary context, historical context, genre, all that as time went on, you start just doing that just, as a discipline. It just becomes like, just normal. And so I found myself just doing that with the scriptures. And as we're reading the Bible over and over again, just getting familiar with the story of God, you know, you're reading a passage and things started to pop out because you're staring at the fish, as it were, for so long that, you know, like, wow, that passage sounds like what's going on in Matthew 4. And so I would be doing that kind of stuff. And so when I say I go to the commentaries on Wednesday, I've kind of made a skeleton already of what it seems the passage the author is talking about, and what it seems like the theme that flows through the Bible. And that's one thing that you and I would probably agree on for sure, is that as you read the Bible, when you come to any passage, it's not like this new thing that's never happened in the scriptures before. Yeah. There's always a myriad of themes and things that God is trying to really just bring this deep into our hearts. And so I'm really trying to figure those things out. And where do we see Jesus clearly in that passage? Yeah. So then from there, I'm able to go and have the commentaries kind of assist and supplement my understanding of what it seems to be. Because sometimes I'll do all that and I'll be kind of off. And then
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'll read and be like, man, I never saw this and that and this and that, and it'll kind of redirect me, you know. So that's the beauty of having, you know, older saints who their whole focus, you know, is to translate Romans or something.
So you just talked about, where do you see Jesus in the passage? Is that an underlying question or an overt question that you carry into every sermon that you either want to answer directly or indirectly, you think?
I want to be careful not to, you know, because sometimes, you know, a text, yeah, I want to be careful not to over-spiritualize a text, but I really do feel like that in many of the texts when I read the Bible, it's so clear that you can preach the gospel. You can preach the good news of why Christ has come, who we are, what God has done, how he made enemies his friends. And so I do have one eye open for that, for sure. My ear is definitely super sensitive to seeing the doctrine of God's grace.
Yeah. So by Thursday, you said you send off all the other stuff. So really, by the end of the day, Wednesday, it's pretty much ready to go.
Yeah.
What's it look like? Is it you said it's kind of manuscripted, but not.
Oh yeah. I wish I could show you. Yeah, it's kind of, here's what I've been doing lately. So basically I'll have the passage and I'll have I'll have it highlighted. So in yellow. And then I'll have, like, say, for example, verse 33 of chapter 4 in Acts. I highlight verse 33. And then I'll have my research, all, like, you know, this big pot of research. And then I'll kind of take my research and plop it under verse 33. Then I'll do that for each verse.
Yeah.
And then I find myself, like, writing, like, it depends if it's 12 verses, 12 little talks.
Yeah.
You know, basically explaining, but also trying to bring together the verses. And so then I'm able to, and to me, that's like, it's better chunks to swallow, you know? So now I'm like, okay, so here's the two or three things I want to say when I'm looking at verse 33 that's in correlation to the rest of the passage. And then I'm able to do so. So at the end, I'll have a highlighted verse, a lot of regular print, highlighted verse, regular print, highlighted verse, regular print. So then I'll go back through that and kind of make it nice and pretty and see if there's any opportunities to take something and say, man, here's a good analogy. Maybe I should put a good analogy here to draw this out. Or, man, maybe I should have Jonathan make a little diagram about this reality of unity flowing from humility, which flows from, flowing from love, which flows from humility, you know. And then, so I'm doing all that with that text. And so by Wednesday night, hopefully I have all those thoughts. And so that's what it looks like. It's like a couple sheets of paper highlighted with text. And then Thursday, I'll take that. And now I can send him, you know, I'll put S1 for slide one. Have the highlighted verse, and then I'll have like, here's the words I might want you to bold for me, Jonathan, and then I'll see if I want to take any of that text and make it a bullet point, and I'll decide like what I want to put on the slides. So I'll use that as my template for my slides.
Gotcha.
And then finally, well, just to keep, if we can go get
really
specific,
yeah.
And then what'll usually happen is I'll come back to that document, and I'll realize, now, how am I going to read this up front? And then I'll look at it, and I'll start to make it pliable for the way I flow on Sunday. So I'll make sure that I'm following along with the slides. So I'll make sure, okay, if I have these as numbers, I want to make sure I put those in this document.
Right.
And then I'll kind of take things out, add things, and I'll make it kind of nice while I'm watching, you know, Saturday football, maybe if I got time or something like that. But usually at that point, I'm not doing much. I'm just kind of hanging out and hanging with my family, hanging with my kids. So
on Sunday, you just print out your Word document and you have the printed document with you?
Yeah, so it was interesting when I first, probably my first 5 years at Mack Avenue, and before then, I would do most of my sermons by just having a Bible, and I would print out a little note, like some little notes, and I would actually tape them to my Bible.
Yeah.
I think my goal there was I would just try to, as much as I could, just teach without notes. Mm-hmm. As time went on, I realized I was asking the Lord. Somebody had me do a conference in Denver, and I said, "I want to try something in Denver. I want to try to preach with notes." And the reason why is because I felt like, although I think the Lord blesses my teaching without notes, I was like, "Man, if there is an opportunity to have notes and have a couple areas where I felt like, you know what, I could be going off and having a great time in the Lord, but at this point, I want to make sure I say this word, because this word packs a lot of meaning, that there's something important about, if you can have the right word sometimes." I said, it would be good to have those notes. And so I did that in Colorado, and some people in my congregation was like, "Man, that was weird to see you with notes." But I started doing that here because what I realized is I said, I need to learn how to preach with notes. And that is because I would watch these guys, they would have notes, but they would go walking around and they would come back to their notes and still be in dialogue. And it kind of was like, it didn't look like they had notes. And so lately, that's what I've been doing for the last year is I bring these notes up. I set them up on it's like a stage in a building. We meet at a school.
Yeah.
And it's been great because now, you know, I have my highlights and I know where I'm going. I can go over and hang out with the body. I can come back, hit those specific words, and I'm really learning how to do this. It's again, it's a learning curve for me because I haven't done it before, but I love trying to learn how to balance the impromptuness and authenticity of just going and sharing my heart from the scriptures. And the importance of the preparedness of having notes. So I'm trying to balance those.
Well, that's part of why I even asked you earlier if you grew up in church, because what you're describing there with that authenticity and all that seems like that's in line just with the tradition of African-American preaching, you know, in our country. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued by how it sounds like you're conflating a very exegetical model that you learned at Gordon Conwell with this tradition that, you know, would be part of African-American preaching. And I love the sound of, I'm curious just to see what, I want to start watching and listening to your sermons because I want to hear how all this works.
Well, that's encouraging. Let me tell you, Tony Evans, who's in Texas, was one of the first brothers I thought, when I first came to faith, I didn't know what to do. I was like, okay, I'm a Christian now in college. And so basically the Lord used like radio to kind of train me up.
Yeah.
And I start listening to Tony Evans, you know, and I remember thinking like, man, I love this brother. Cause I love the fact that every once in a while he would say something that was so street. I'd be like, how did that dude just say that up front? It'd be just so like, yeah, it'd just be like I was talking to one of my boys and on a block, you know? But then the next sentence, it would be so learned.
Yeah.
It was almost like, now don't get it twisted. I got a doctorate, you know? Yeah, yeah. It was like, but I'm also, so I thought, man, I would love to have that kind of flow in my community where I could challenge people in my community to do a spiritual chin up, but I could also be down enough where they could think, man, by God's grace, he can use me like that too. Hmm. And I thought, man, that would be a cool balance, you know?
I said, are you always adjusting that balance?
I feel like I am. I feel like I'm keep trying to learn how to do that. Cause every once in a while I'll get a staff guy who says, hey man, I think your words are too big. You're using words that people don't understand. But then I'll talk to, you know, brothers and sisters in the crowd and they're like, man, you know, we've never heard anything like that before, you know? So, I'm trying to make sure, cause I do that intentionally. I told one of my staff guys, we had a little argument staff meeting once. I said, dude, look, I'm not trying to be prideful, but I am intentional. I'm intentionally using some of those big words to challenge our people to not be lazy. While at the same time, I use slang just to let you know that, yeah, man, I'm just a regular dude out here, man, just trying to walk with the Lord too, you know?
Yeah. So. Nice. Well, I would imagine, I'm going to shift gears a little bit here, but since you told me that your favorite book is A Commentary on Revelation.
I know.
I would imagine you do, amidst all of these other things, five kids being on the street and all that, I would imagine you do a fair amount of reading of some kind.
Yeah, I agree.
So as you're doing that kind of work, do you have any kind of system or method where you just run across something that you really like and you know that you're not going to use it in a sermon next week or the week after, but you know that you want to store it away? Do you have some kind of system for keeping all those ideas or things that come to your heart?
You know what, John, you're convicting me because when I was
not a trying to convict you.
Yeah, too late, bro. So when I was in seminary, man, our professor told us, and he actually gave us an assignment. He said, listen, one of the smartest things you can do is to have a document or two of just analogies, you know, and illustrations. And it was so true. Like, cause things pop up all the time and you could just write those down, you know, have a little card and just write them down.
Yeah.
And so I need to do that. And even what you're saying, you know, I do run across a lot of things that I'm reading or I'm listening to and I fail to say, hey, I want to have a log of all these things cause the Lord can use these. And I think that's a really good word. So I'm not that good at it actually.
That's okay. I mean, part of the reason I even ask, I think you're the, I've lost track. You're the 20-something interview I've done. And I've found, because we were, you know, I was taught the same thing, but I found a fair amount of people are really particular about that and a fair amount aren't. And I wonder how much of it's a personality of, I'm not trying to make you feel better. I'm thinking this through, you know,
right, talking.
I think a lot of it's just a personality. For some, they draw a lot from these previous things they've done. And for some, they just, they've got to go with what's fresh for them, and it's always what's, you know, what's right now. So I was curious.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you know when your sermon's done? You know, as you're putting it together, are there questions that you ask, you know, to make sure that you've covered this? Or
man, you're it's good questions, man. Because I guess I'm kind of simple. I'm like,
I like simple.
I'm like, I guess my sermon's done, but I'm done with the last verse.
Well, that's true, because you do really do verse by verse, right?
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, I guess we're going to verse 11. So, but yeah, when I get through a framework of a thought, you know, a pericope, I'm like, yeah, okay, this is where we're going. And if I can land a plane knowing that I've answered the question as seems the author is trying to make us ask,
yeah,
then I feel like I've been faithful. Yeah. And that's my goal. Before God's grace, I'd always pray, Lord, would you just allow me to be faithful? Let me be faithful to what you want to teach us. And so as I listen, I'm like, Lord, okay, what is the author really trying to say here? Not trying to just, you know, like to me, but what is he trying to say to the first century Jew? And then from there, say, okay, can we get that with great clarity? Can we hit that in our local body? And then train our local body to first ask that question. What is he saying to the first century Jew? And then after that, ask, okay, if he's saying it to them, now how do we move that toward us today? You know, so I always tell our body, like, let's first have accurate observation and interpretation, and then we can move toward how we deal with it in our context. So when I feel like I've answered those questions, then I'm ready. I'm a happy camper. So.
And how are you? You talked earlier about how you're raising up other people within the congregation who are starting to do more teaching and preaching. You know, they don't. I would imagine most of them don't have the same training and, you know, an MDiv that you do. I assume it's an MDiv. Yeah. So how are you helping to equip and raise up some of them to preach?
Good question. So it's funny. We have, first of all, the Lord has blessed us with some really good elders, man. These guys are brilliant.
Yeah.
They love the Lord. So my associate pastor actually went to Gordon Conwell as well. So I was able to talk to his brother and come in, to the D as well. He knows, Jonathan, my buddy, one of my best friends, Leon Stevenson. And so he's trained up. And what I love is our discipleship model. So every person in our local body who's a member, they meet one-on-one with someone, weekly or bi-weekly. And then we're all in MAG groups that meet weekly.
Yeah.
And so I have the honor and the joy of being able to, personally meet, with my elder team, 3 times out of every month. And go through doctrine and training, and give them opportunities to teach and fail and critique them.
Yeah.
And so, and so we have a lot of opportunities to get it right and get it wrong. And so when they are usually writing their sermons, which is interesting, I think you could probably relate to this. So you and I, we get, you know, a couple of days to prepare.
Right.
You know, I give these guys a month, you know,
sure.
I mean, I say, hey, I want you to teach on, you know, I told, you know, Pastor Leon, he's teaching on, right after Acts, you know, Acts 5, 12 to whatever, not this weekend, but next weekend, because he's going to have a baby. His wife's going to have a baby the weekend after that. And they get 3 to 4 weeks. And then usually during that time, they're writing a rough draft and then they're bringing it to me. We're able to process through it. And so during those time, there's a great teachable moments for me to really come alongside them and share, hey, here's, you know, this is too much information. You might want to do this. And, these guys are really teachable because as you can attest to, I think one of the major motivations to teachability is when you finally got to do it. And so I feel like now, when they have to teach, they're like, okay, tell me, how do I do this? You know? So, those are the opportunities that I take, the personal, training times that we have as a leadership team for me to train the guys I'm discipling, which are my elders, but also those specific times while they're preparing for me to have them in my office and us really go through the text and try to model Bible study methods with them.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me ask you a couple questions. We're getting towards the end here, but
sure.
You know, you talked about some of your favorite resources, but are there other books that you've read that you feel like have really formed who you are as a preacher? They might be preaching books. They might not be.
Good question. A real book, you ever read like, it's called Center Church?
Yeah, sure. Tim Keller?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one that's really got me going right now because it just really talks about how to minister in context.
Yeah.
And I just think, man, like to me, if you're talking about preaching or teaching the Bible, man, and teaching doctrine and the things of God, to understand your cultural context and understand how to take truths that are transcendent, but yet realize that they're going to be plopped into culture is huge.
And his chapter on preaching was really helpful, too. Just that one in specific, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm actually, we're going to do a retreat, and I'm going through it again because it was so instrumental for me. Yeah. Also, Kingdom Prologue. That's a book that basically just taught me, for me, and this is where I'm kind of nerdy. I think the things that have helped me, and this is what's hard, when I tell people the books I read, usually the books are like George Ladd, you know, New Testament theology.
Right.
Because, and they're just like, dude, like, you know, I mean, other books, you know, where you're chilling. I'm like, well, no, those are my chill books. And it's because I've never really gotten to like kind of, I mean, I've read Desiring God, but I don't read a ton of those books as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. Because I love reading books that inform my understanding, my theology that informs my understanding of how to study the Bible. And so, so I feel like I just want to give you a snapshot of why, like Grudem Systematic Theology, Ladd's New Testament Theology, like those books, for me have been, really key.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because then I start throwing like Moyer out, you know, the commentary on Isaiah. Like those are the things I read. Kingdom Prologue, that's Klein. And it's a book that basically talks about the book of Genesis and just how to think about it. And not, I would say, pop evangelical culture, but he really takes a very hard line focus on how what creation was about. And to me, that's huge. To understand the creation narrative, I think really informs how you look at the Bible. You know, so for me, like looking at the creation narrative and looking at why God writes Revelation and what is he trying to communicate are these two bookends to understanding, man, I mean, every aspect of evangelism, prayer, worship, I mean, you name theology, name something that we do in our formation. And I think those things are informed by it. So.
Well, and that plays in really well with what you said earlier, having that much broader perspective of scripture and narrative overall really helps you as you approach each particular text to know how it fits in that bigger scheme, which is an easy, it's easy to skip that step. So, all right. Well, if somebody wants to, your kids are home.
I know. Sorry.
It's all right. It's not the first time. My kids are home too. We're getting lucky. So if somebody wants to keep track of everything that's going on with you, you know, what's your church's website? Do you blog at all? Cool. Twitter, Facebook? What are all those?
Yeah. You can reach us at www.macave.com.
Yeah.
You can also go to our Mac Avenue Community Development site. It's just macavecommunitydevelopment.com. Yeah. We have a discipleship website, which basically provides resources on discipleship called discipleshipdefined.com. That's, you know, discipleshipdefined, defined.com.
Yeah.
My staff has gotten on me, John, because I don't do Twitter much, but one day when I do, I'm Eric Russ 76.
Got it.
So, I need to get on that more. And you can find us on Facebook, at Mac Avenue Community Church. And thanks so much for asking that.
Yeah. I mean, I think people hear some of the stuff you're talking about, and they might be intrigued and want to hear more about what you're up to. And so I know I would be. So
thank you so much, buddy.
Yeah, well, Eric, it's been a pleasure. It's been a fun conversation to have.
Thanks for processing and giving me a chance to share my heart, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this for the Covenant community, too. This is awesome.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been fun. Well, blessings to you.
All right, man. Hopefully you stay in touch, man. We'll see how the Lord will allow our paths to cross in the future.
Yeah. So. Well, come on down to Austin. You can hang out with Jonathan. You know, we're in one of the cool cities.
Oh, I know you are, dude. Trust me. I have to renew my mind all the time.
No, tons of respect. Tons of respect for you choosing to go to Detroit out of calling, not because it's the cool place. So.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Blessings.
Appreciate you. Okay. Blessings, brother.